Hello and welcome to Analytics Everywhere. This is the first time we've done this podcast in quite a while, so I think we're all excited to bring this back, especially today with our guest. I'll go ahead and introduce myself. I'm Evan Roussakis. I work with Preset as a developer advocate, and I'm also a PMC member on the Apache Superset project. And then I'll hand the mic over to Max.
Hey, I'm Max. I've been on this podcast before because we can't host a podcast too. And I know we were talking at some point about taking a different direction on the podcast where we would be, God, what was the name, where we would have a beer and talk about database drivers.
Oh yeah, designated driver coming soon.
Coming soon.
The branding is now complete, so it'll happen.
So yeah, we have some expansion ideas with the podcast or spinoffs. But yeah, my name is Max. I am CEO and founder at Preset, and I've been working with data, building data tools for a while. I've been very active in open source, and I started Apache Superset, which is a data viz tool that you should know about if you're listening to this show, but if you don't, go check it out. Apache Airflow, that's an orchestrator, a data orchestrator for data pipelines. And Tarush, you're up next.
Hey guys, thank you so much for having me. Hopefully we add some value to your listeners. This is my first time being on the show, unlike Max and Evan. My background is in data on very early data engineer at Salesforce, been very narrowly focused on data platform, using a lot of the tools Max built in his career on the other side of it, and the using these tools to add value to companies. And I started 5X about 2.5-3 years ago. The founder and CEO.
Well, welcome. And yeah, so give us a little more about the origin story of 5X. What was kind of the initial idea that woke you up in the middle of the night and said, hey, I've got to do this thing?
That's a great question. I've been a practitioner for a long time, and most recently ran data for WeWork. WeWork's obviously a very colorful company, but at its peak, built a 100-person data group. We supported 12,000 employees. And, post the WeWork story, as I was looking for my next thing, would get calls from all of these CEOs, big banks, small companies, everything in between, fintech, e-commerce, SaaS. And, every CEO was talking about, we're sitting on this gold mine of data and we just need to activate it and build insights and data science. But the reality of it was, hey, hold your horses. There's a lot more to this. The modern day data ecosystem is extremely fragmented. You have to go speak to these 10 different vendors and go stitch this together. And data modeling is, very, very important, and self-service. And, the data science stuff which you're thinking about is actually a few years away. And it occurred to me that, if you today, the analogy we keep going back is everyone is selling car parts. And if you walked into a Honda today and they tried to sell you an engine instead of a Civic, we would just have much fewer cars on the street. Building and maintaining your car is non-trivial. Very simple to go get started. But as you think about true mid-market enterprise scale, when you have multiple companies, you have different roles, when each of them have their own spend, your developers are moving between 10 different tools, we realize that data teams today, 9 out of 10 teams actually get very little value from data. We've known this for a while. And especially in a world today where, it's no longer a blank check for data teams because your VCs love it and everyone is talking about data, but companies are getting way more practical. What's the ROI? It becomes really difficult to go justify ROI when you're spending all of this time building and maintaining. At WeWork, we had 100% data team. We have 20 people building a platform. WeWork's data platform isn't anything unique, right? So why is WeWork spending $4 million a year to build a platform, integrate these tools, do POCs, to go figure out what tools make sense for them, access control, spend, utilization, compliance? And, we think the data space is going to be fragmented for a long time, right? By nature, it's built in a fragmented way. It's very difficult for like AWS to go acquire Snowflake. Does that mean it stops supporting GCP? It's very difficult. Someone goes and buys dbt and that, you know, goes to one cloud. It's going to be a new open source project which sort of comes on these other clouds, right? So data is very well, is going to be fragmented for a long time. So the whole idea of 5x was, how do we build you an end-to-end platform? Because there's a lot of value in that, right? AWS is in some ways a collection of 50 different services, but they give you a single place to provision. They give you single unified billing. They give you a single digital identity layer, a single place to operate this, migration services, spend. How do we do all of this on top of a very fragmented ecosystem? So, you know, you can pick and choose what components make sense for you, depending on your industry, depending on your use case, your size and budget. And we can go stitch the platform layer for you, take care of all of those other things, give you an integrated experience, which means that number one, you don't need to have data infrastructure teams. And number two, your data teams can actually go spend 100% of their time focused on driving ROI to the business.
I think that's super interesting. Like if we look at where we were at, I don't know, 10 years ago, right? Like 10 years ago where you would have, well, first accessibility of tools were just completely, tools were not accessible. You could not go and buy, I don't know, if you need a world-class or just a decent database, a decent visualization tool, you need a data transformation tool. So the stack might have been something like Teradata, Informatica, or things that were more monolithic, like the Microsoft SQL Server suite of things. But all of that was extremely prohibitive. So then with the rise of SaaS, we've seen just this explosion of tools that are all cloud services, all pay as you go, which is super great. And maybe like there's been like a really clear big hype cycle in the venture ecosystem where a lot of companies got funded, so much so that it created too much diversity where you don't know what to pick and what to assemble together and which version of this works with which version of that. And everything on paper or on sales battle sheet seems to be integrated, but in reality, you spend half of your time connecting the things. So it felt like we had made some progress in terms of like world-class tools being activatable, you know, in a day. But at the same time, there's still like a lot of hurdles and, you know, stitching or gluing these things together, right? So that's an issue of our time. And then we're starting to see emergence of, you know, a stack that's pretty cohesive, right? Instead of having like 12 options in each layer of the stack, there's like a clear, like two or three winners. Like in the data warehouse, it's clearly Snowflake, BigQuery, unless you want like a more specialized database, but like most people that want a cloud database can just be like, okay, I'll pick one of these two. Data sync, you go Fivetran, or there's one or two open source alternatives. Each layer is becoming more comprehensive now, but it'd be nice to have just a single bill for all of this. And like when you fire it up, that it all works together, and maybe some canned things, like some pre-made, like a cookie cutter template, like where you don't start from zero, and for every company to have to go and rebuild their Salesforce like pipeline and, you know, dashboards and all this stuff.
You know, we think about a lot, and I love that you sort of touched on Informatica, right? The world came from one neck to choke. You had Microsoft's ecosystem or you had Informatica. And the reason they really work is you have one neck to choke. But the underlying components are terrible. Like, data teams hated using them. So when we think about, you know, sort of stitching together different vendors, what we think about a lot is, you know, the SMB space, to really go get started, you know, today there are tutorials which you can spend, you know, 2-3 hours and go stitch together a very basic stack. This is, you know, you're a one-person data team. This sort of works. But this very quickly starts to balloon as the company gains traction. And that's when things get really complicated. So, you know, it's not about, you know, your initial stack, but how does this grow over a period of time? And that's when you add all of these layers of sort of complexity. So, you know, what we think about a lot is, different companies are going to have different use cases. For a percentage of companies, you are linked to the billing models to how individual tools work, and you're not going to be able to go pick one vendor across every category. you are going to want to have some sort of diversity. Sort of Databricks is sort of becoming very relevant. You know, you're on sort of Google's infrastructure. You might have some security. You might have some security requirements. So when you stitch together these different tools, how do we really think about this for your long-term journey? Where, you know, initially you could potentially go get started with sort of DuckDB, but your data models have grown. And data migrations are one of the most expensive thing inside the data world, because it's very, you have to have business continuity. You can't just put that off. So how do we make this really easy and can actually support you from the, you know, from the early stage to really the mid-market enterprise? There are a bunch of companies which do, you know, here's the sort of data in a box for SMB. The big problem with that is as soon as they get some traction and they hire a data team, now the data team's going to go, hey, we need more flexibility. We need to go past, you know, these few things which we've built together. We might need the enterprise offering of this tool. And all of a sudden, it's like, great, we have to migrate away from this platform because it is either white labeled or, you know, if you deploy open source yourself, again, great to go get started. But
I think the popular opinion on this one is changing, right? The total cost of ownership of managing open source on your own is can be brutal. Also, not just on a tool per tool basis too, but just overall, like this idea of a pass. If you take a pass like Airbyte, who pivoted recently, so they were trying to put together an offering of a collection of open source tool and a comprehensive platform, but doing that themselves, not with the vendors or the people, say like preset is to superset, or the Confluent to Kafka, or Elastic to Elastic, but like having, they were trying to do that on their behalf. And I think they completely underestimated the burden of like managing not only one open source project for a set of customer, but a collection of them and keeping them together, especially as these tools are generational. Like at some point, a certain tool might, like say MySQL might not be as relevant as Postgres anymore. You've made a bet on MySQL. Now you got to make a bet on Postgres. Now you have this legacy to transfer. So I think the popular opinion there is changing. And the idea of stitching together the best in breed or the commercial open source company offering in a comprehensive platform, as opposed to like manage it on your own, like you would be in trouble now if you had to like manage what's in your stack. So dbt, superset, Airflow,
all the usual aspects, Fivetran, we're getting into dbt, we have Census, we have Sigma, we have we're getting into Airflow. So you know, 12, 15 vendors, all of the, you know, usual suspects in the data space, work with every one of them. And exactly, right, you know, a bunch of companies try to deploy tools, they're very quickly to go get started. Great, we have four tools, but like as soon as they start getting real enterprise use cases on them, all of a sudden, their full-time job is right, really maintaining these open source tools. We don't want to do that, right? We're looking at this as how do you go do this for enterprise? And enterprise wants, you know, the security, they want the reliability, they want to be, they want to be on like the latest version of these tools. So it's best to go pop on the people who build it and say, give us your cloud offering and let's stitch this together in an interchangeable way.
Yeah, the greater truth and the statement I've said in the past is the best people to operate and run a piece of software are the people who are building that piece of software. So if I try to be like, I'm going to start a Kafka company, but I've never really contributed to Kafka, right? It's going to be hard for me to run the latest, greatest version, patch secure, optimize Elastic on Kubernetes, like whatever it is, like multi-tenant, all of these things are going to become impossible. So I think it does absolutely make sense to.
I would imagine things like compliance play a big part in this as well, too, right? A lot of these offerings are SOC 2 compliant and various other forms of compliance. That does that stuff ride along to your customers?
Yeah, and when you think about security, it's not just great. It's in the cloud. We have all of the guarantees. All of these are compliant, SOC 2, sort of GDPR, all of that fun stuff. But when you think about just from the audit perspective, like think of the role of the CISO, right? Like, hey, how do I track usage across all of these different tools? You're not going to log into like 10 different tools and be like, what did someone do across each of these tools? We can just pull all of this together into a single pane. And when we look at like the audit suite, it's like, we can look at the entire journey. If somebody logged into this tool, they added this connector, they built this dashboard and preset, they ran this query on Snowflake, they built this reverse ETL connection. It becomes really nice when you have that single pane, even for like digital identity, right? Managing, you know, who's got access to what across which tool. And as soon as you add the layer of like multiple workspaces, now like how do you attribute spend across, you know, multiple workspaces? How do you, you know, who gets access to what across these tools? And we end up with, you know, this sort of problem balloons very quickly. It's easy to get started, but as soon as you start to become slightly bigger, you sort of realize that your data teams are spending so much of their time actually just taking care of these, you know, individual things across these individual tools.
Yeah, even like just vendor relationship and validation, for instance, can be a huge pain. Like you introduce a new vendor, if you're SOX compliant, you gotta do all sorts of things to get them approved, right? And so if you can get a single bill and a single approval cycle for some of these things, you save a lot. Especially it's like shit work that no one wants to do. Like, yeah, do you want to be the person having the security review with, you know, 12 different vendors? And even like procurement is a pain in the butt, you know.
Those like lunches and dinners, which all these vendors, you get to any size and they want to take you out for lunch once a week, 10 vendors, that's 10 hours of your week. That's sort of 10 hours a month. And like maintaining those relationships, putting all of them through financial review, how do they work together doing security review? Again, just going back to the WeWork example, if someone came to us and said, you know, we'll manage this entire thing for you. You know, we'll sort of charge you a fraction of this and you don't need to have a 20-person data platform team. This would be a no-brainer. It's like $4 million, you know, about a 20-person team right there of a 100-person company. I would much rather reinvest that money into hiring more data engineers, into hiring more analytics engineers, more into the data science space, instead of worrying about.
That's a role that's dead. I think the data infrastructure engineer, it's not completely dead. I think there's still some need for it, but it's becoming legacy real quick because that person, not that person, is irrelevant. That person should go work, if you're a Kafka expert, go work at Confluent, you know, exactly. And then build a service that's multi-tenant that works for everyone who uses Kafka everywhere, right? As opposed to saying like, oh, well, now we need to have a Kafka specialist at every company that runs Kafka. Heck no, that makes no sense, right?
Yeah, the world hasn't evolved, right? Like 10 years ago, you know, maybe longer, 15 years ago when I was at Salesforce, there was no mixed panel. When we wanted to get like feature usage, we would look at log data and we would put this through Hadoop and go get like, hey, what is sort of usage at a single level? So we needed to have large infrastructure teams. But now all of a sudden, you know, I sort of recently wrote a paper which sort of talks about in some ways the rise of the data generalist. Because you no longer need an infrastructure team because you can use a fully managed platform and you can be up and running very quickly. We're no longer building our own pipelines. We have something like Fivetran. So in some ways, like what one person can do with sort of leverage is way more powerful. So I think we're starting to see the rise of, you know, even people in data science realize that, hey, we can't really do any data science unless we have some data engineering skill sets. I think we're starting to see the rise of, you know, more sort of general roles because a lot of data infrastructure is going away. A lot of, you know, data engineers would spend so much time on pipelines, that's going away. So you're spending more and more time on the higher layers of abstraction. I think that's really
true. Like shallow and wide. So people often ask like, oh, I want to, you know, people will come to me and be like, oh, I'm a data engineer. What should I learn? Or I'm starting a career in data engineering, this or that. Like, what should I focus on? What should I specialize in? And maybe we should go, I think, especially in the age of AI, we could talk more about that in relation to the topic of shallow and wide. But now that you can get assisted with a pretty good AI at writing SQL, setting up systems, getting help here and there, I think being able to have a handle or a wider angle of like wider set of skills, maybe you don't need the depth as much. Because AI, I was writing this essay kind of about AI is going to change the data team. And I went, I went title by title. How is it going to affect the data engineer? How is it going to affect the data scientist? How is it going to affect the data infrastructure engineer? And what I was starting to realize going item by item is that the more general skills and the breadth of understanding was becoming more valuable. Like maybe we need less specialization.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. You know, what I'm really excited about is the advent of lean teams. You know, as a data leader myself, it was, you know, there's a little bit of ego involved. I want to build a big team. I want to, you know, have all of these different departments and these different roles. And I think, you know, the world has changed. And I think the sort of mindset of data team leaders is yet to change. And I think the evolved mindset of this is lean data generalist teams. I think you still obviously want specialists in data science and, like, you know, a really good analytics engineer. But for the most part, you know, you're going to see the rise of like lean teams full of sort of data generalists, which are just able to move very quickly. And being lean, you avoid the biggest tax in the world, which is the communication tax. You know, at a going from a 2-person to a 3-person team, very little, but going from a 50-person team to a 51-person team, that incremental person is not adding, you know, a very, very marginal sort of gain, and saving on, you know, building, being able to do more with leaner teams is going to massively affect ROI.
Maybe our bias and our thinking aligns there because we are people from big company that went to a startup. So they're like, oh, no, what we know now is we need like very lean data teams with people that can do a lot. I think that some of that is a startup thinking, but I think it is a trend in the industry too. And if I was to build like a data team within a large organization, I would probably lean in the same direction of being like, you know, it's not about how specialized you are as much as how much you can get done on your own.
How do you think this shift toward being sort of a generalist manifests itself in terms of products and the components of the stack? It kind of was, like you said, very fragmented, where each tool along the way was itself in a way kind of a specialized thing. Are we going to see more of a shift towards Swiss Army knife tooling, or you know, how does this change? People don't probably want to jump from tool to tool to tool all day to do a generalist workload.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of why FabX exists, right? We're building this thing called Super IDE, which is you can control your, you know, whatever your ingestion layer is, whether it's Airbyte or it's Fivetran, or if it's DBT or if it's Medallion, it shouldn't make a difference, right? Like there'll be a slightly different UI for every tool because they have different concepts. But in general, can we do everything from a single IDE? And if your data team is not switching between 10 tools on a daily basis, can do something from one place, it becomes a really powerful experience.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's the, you know, with loosely coupled tools, like the, what we've seen the trend in over the past, like, you know, 5 years, maybe with SaaS too, loosely coupled, you get the best in class, you know, as a, and then you get like to choose for each layer of the stack, you get to pick the tool that works best for you. The downside of that, it's a much less cohesive platform, right? Yeah, like tool fragmentation. You spend a lot of time kind of, yeah, gluing things together, trying to exchange metadata, or just switching context. Like you go, like you're all of a sudden you're in a UI and then a different UI and they're not in sync. All of that like fairly confusing. The information architecture is different across tools, right? So in Airflow, it's an operator, and in something else, it's called some, you know, a task, and like all these things are confusing. So ideally, you know, things have become more comprehensive, more integrated, but the risk of that is going to go back towards the monolith, and the monolith's got a bunch of big issues. The main one of which is just like, oh, you pick Informatica because they're great at data transformation in 2008, but then it comes with a bundle of other things that are best integrated with, you know, the tool you like, but they are kind of shitty in their own vertical. So it's like, you can't have it all. It's strike the balance of like loosely coupled enough, but cohesive enough too.
One thing which, you know, is undervalued, but one of the big, big fears of, again, the sort of fragmented ecosystem is in terms of what are your best practices? because all of these tools are starting to get into their, in, you know, they're trying to go adjacent, right? And that makes sense because, you know, they're trying to consolidate in some way. But you all of a sudden have Fivetran and, you know, you give people access to Fivetran, a percentage of your developers are going to start building transformations in Fivetran because that's, you know, Fivetran has gone into the transformation space. And now you're going to have percentage of your workloads, which are just using Fivetran for ingestion and some DBT model separately versus some of the transformations happening there. And now you have two different paths with, you know, what Looker was, and I know people haven't spoken about Looker, but, you know, in my journey, Looker at one point was very, very prevalent. In terms of data modeling, do you do data modeling inside LookML? Or again, do you do this inside DBT? And we would see this all the time where some developers would do it inside LookML, some would do it inside DBT. And this is a horrible experience end to end. You know, you create this massive fan out problems that you don't have consistency. And you need to start to like throw people at this to just maintain this because it's so not clean and simple. So again, the idea of like bring this all together, it's becoming much easier to promote best practices because here's the golden path. Here's how we do things. We're using this tool for ingestion. We're doing modeling inside this. This is the best part. And that becomes very repeatable. And that causes really good hygiene across your ecosystem. And again, it's fine for a 2, 3, 4-person team, which is just getting started because it's so small. It's all inside one person's head. But as soon as you get to, you know, your sort of data team growing and scaling, these things become real overhead, which becomes very difficult to maintain because the hardest problems are sort of, you know, team culture and like best practices problem. They, you know, those require, you know, sort of communication and, you know, being very aligned.
Yeah. So this part, you know, there's a clear trade off there. If you have like really clear, like, you can only use these tools in this company, there's some really clear rules around what you can do, it cannot do. Then that comes at the cost of speed too sometimes, right? Because if you're like, use whatever, just get the job done, do it however, you know, you want to do it, pick your favorite tool, you know, then that creates more depth, but often allows people to move a little bit faster. So it's another place where we need to strike a balance, I think.
I remember we had a CRO behind my desk at WeWork once and something was down. And he sat behind my desk and said, you have to fix this now. When like shit hits the fan, it doesn't matter how many best practices docs you have there. Like people are going to do whatever it takes to go get the job done. So right. those best practices docs kind of make sense. But again, in the real world, you know, unless you make this very easy and have a single path on like how to do stuff, you know, have a really integrated experience, which promotes best practices because you have a platform to do it. In practice, you know, how many times have I seen a company go build documentation and go, you know, explain what their data models are, but like a month later, it's obviously out of date again, right? It becomes way easier when it's enforced at the platform level.
Yeah, the metadata, all the data dictionary type efforts in the Data Hub, Amundsen, Atlan, Atlassian, they're trying to solve that problem from a federation kind of point of view, right? Let's like, you know, you can have a super messy, complicated knowledge data graph, right? And then we'll help you make sense of it. But it's like, sometimes it'll be like, oh, you're just providing a map to a shit show, right? Like, thank you for the map to my shit show, but it's still a shit show. And I think like, you know, even like at the fragmentation and the tooling problems are reality. Right, like most enterprises with more than say 1,000 employees have an average like 5 or 6 BI tools, for instance. Yeah, you know, we started this conversation talking about like data migrations are really hard, and because data has a lot of, it's heavy, has a lot of gravity, so it's hard to move. It's also like, you know, a big problem too is we've made a lot of tools that make it easy for people to create things. And I've done that. I'm the first person, like Airflow made it a lot easier for a lot more people to ship a lot more tasks, like build, you know, pipelines dynamically and you know, the heart of Superset 2, we want to make it really easy for someone to create a new chart, create a dashboard.
Yeah.
The downside of that is like, now you've got a pile of things that are going into disrepair, like a half life of a dashboard might be like 3 months and, you know, yeah. No one ever go and clean it up.
I mean, half-life could be like I built it and no one used it. Like in reality, that's a real sort of problem. But I love what you said about enterprise fragmentation, and any company above 1,000 people has got multiple different, they probably are on Databricks and Snowflake. So forget just the BI layer, which is the application of it. And this is the, you know, I'm convinced that your chief data officer's consolidation efforts, or we're going to use one tool, it doesn't work. You go acquire a company, they have a different stack. It's, you know, your sort of marketing team wants to be on a BI tool because the your CMO likes this BI tool. It's a really difficult sell to be like, we're going to consolidate. And again, you know, this is kind of one of the things which becomes really difficult managing all of this at the enterprise scale. But when you have this, you know, we have this concept of multiple workspaces where you can have a workspace for your marketing team for an acquisition for all of these different and for all of these sort of for all of these different subsidiaries, and they see their stack. So it could be a shared Snowflake, it could be a shared Fivetran, but they have their own BI tool. And now in the integrated experience, they see what they need to. But because we're managing this at a platform level, we can now do all the good stuff, which is, hey, you know, what does spend look like? How do we share spend across this sort of workspace? And for people who are part of this workspace, they're only seeing the tooling which is relevant for them. It's a really nice experience when you see what you need to see and not the 50 other layers which you just have being an enterprise business.
Hey, two question about 5X too, and or around like expansion towards, like, one is data catalog. So it seems like it would make a lot of sense. So since you're federating a bunch of different tools, to have one that federates metadata, and it would be useful for the tool itself and just for the glue. So that was one. Well, let's start with this one, and I'll bring up the other one after.
You know, I think we were talking to some of the biggest sort of data consultancies, right? And what was not really shocking but interesting to note is, you know, they work with enterprise companies, and in reality, what they say is 80% of what they do is on four layers: ingestion, storage, monitoring, reporting. And you know, 80, you know, they obviously, you know, go sort of partner with all these vendors. And again, 80% of that business is still coming from the core stack. I think catalog and metadata, you know, these are very, very, you know, in terms of relative adoption, they're very much at the early stages. Sounds really good.
Problem. Yeah. It's like one of these things that's really compelling. It's like, oh, I really wish I had it, but it's not priority right now, kind of deal.
And the answer to solving some of these problems cannot be a different platform. It's like, hey, if I want to go look at my catalog, I got to go log into yet another platform. But hey, when I get into my workflow, I'm still going back into DBT, or I'm still going back into Fivetran, I'm running queries in Snowflake. And so, you know, just the overhead of, again, introducing another platform to go do sort of catalog and another platform to basically go do governance is just way too much overhead for teams. So, you know, yeah, we really believe that in the long term, catalog and governance and all becomes relevant. But again, what we think about is, how do we really integrate this into a single experience? Mm-hmm. And I think these tools are still in a relative level of infancy, where we haven't, you know, we would go partner with, you know, all of the sort of catalog providers. And, you know, we're still at very much at the early stages of it. If a company really needs it, we'll go implement it in. But it's not really baked into the IDE experience. And I think majority of the lift will actually come in when it's integrated into a single platform experience with giving you the advanced capabilities of some of these catalog, dictionary, and governance tools.
Right. There's definitely some challenges there too. The catalog is like, it's super valuable if it's 100% accurate. The moment it's like 98% accurate too, you don't have full lineage, you don't know if you're looking at everything. The value curve versus like how the coverage, I think, is nonlinear. So it's hard to get value off of them.
I think business users struggle with just having one tool, right? You give them a BI tool and they're still going to come and ask you, can you give me the link of that dashboard again, right?
Like, yeah.
Like now when you tell them, hey, here's your one tool, but you also have a second tool, which is going to give you this sort of definition of this, like it sounds really good in theory. And, you know, they'll come and do trainings and they'll train your business users. Half the people in those business training are on Slack and responding to other work stuff. Like, more tools is just not the answer.
Yeah, maybe we need, I talked about in the past the idea of the metadata warehouse. So we all know we need a data warehouse or many, but ideally, like you have a data warehouse, it's all pre-established, put all your data in there. I think we need a metadata warehouse too, and maybe not a tool on top of it, just all for your ecosystem of tool to share that integration with the metadata warehouse and be able to say like, oh, this superset dashboard comes from this, you know, table in Snowflake that's from this DBT, you know, script here. The other question I had is I'm not sure if it's a question, it's a topic, but migration is super hard, right? So if the reason why we have so much fragmentation explosion is and companies accumulate, like, you know, some companies probably have some DBT, some Airflow, some legacy Informatica, some Python script running somewhere else, some cron jobs. It's really hard and expensive to migrate things. And I feel like it would be a super valuable thing, but it's kind of an impossible technical problem too. Or maybe AI eventually can help with this stuff. But like, if I take an Airflow Informatica job, I try to write a process that's going to translate Informatica to Airflow. It's going to be like common denominator. It's going to kind of work maybe in 60% of cases. So I don't know if you, how you think about migration, if it comes up in your context, or that's not really a requirement or a problem on your layer. That would be your customer's problem, not your problem to help them migrate.
We like to think of it, if it's a customer's problem, it's an opportunity for us. We did a small acquisition last year. We acquired this tool called Gravity Data. And what sort of Gravity is, you know, it's a ELT tool, right? It basically can move data from one source to sort of to the other. And one of the reasons we did this is it actually, when we think about the migration world, it gives us a lot of leverage and a lot of tooling to make these migration processes easier. Because we control it, we're now investing in on tooling on top of, it's not just moving data from one place to another, but really, how do we, you know, be able to make this process easier? It's still like moving data from Teradata to Snowflake, you know, just your sort of queries change. And you know, unless you get really, really deep into, you know, lineage and really understanding that, I think there are a few people who have attempted it, but in general, it's a hard problem. We make this problem relatively much easier because we now have a lot of tooling. Which makes our, you know, when we do migrations, we can offer to sort of go do them for a customer. And because of what we have inside tooling with sort of Gravity and what we've built on top of it, we're becoming just much, much faster at doing these migrations. You know, also, it's not just moving data from one place to be, right? I have a terrible SQL script inside Teradata. I don't want to have a terrible SQL sort of script inside Snowflake now, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, I think the whole migration, you know, if you are biting the bullet and you are going to do a migration and it is going to be expensive, this is an opportunity to go fix things and do it inside the correct way, because you don't want to take garbage from one place.
So that I call it not migration, but phasing, right? The idea of like, okay, we have a 1,000 dashboards and Tableau, we want to move to preset, you know, once and for all. How do we do this? And then it's like, okay, let's look at your top 50 dashboard. Not even look at the ones that are not used. And then we're going to set up this new system. We're going to set up an end of life for the other one and create some incentives for people to migrate their own stuff. I think the whole migration thing, we could just punt it on AI. Like, AI is going to deal with that someday. When it's smart enough, it's going to help with like all that technical debt and all that migration stuff we need to do. So that we don't have to worry about it right now. it's a nice relief. It's a nice thought. I'm not sure if it's realistic.
I think, you know, I think in the next X number of years, there'll be a lot there, right? And, you know, sort of tooling will get better. And we saw the evolution in the data space, right? Hey, there was no good way to, there was no good open source BI project, and now you have preset. There was no, you know, very, very good way to do product analytics, and now you have mixed panel product Amplitude and Heap, right? But I think something which we're doing now, which is quite different from what a lot of other data platform companies are doing, is we're actually investing in our consultancy. you know, VCs typically don't want sort of product companies to do services because it's not really valuable. But, you know, as Max said, if you are a really good streaming engineer, go work at Kafka, or sorry, go work at sort of Confluent. So, you know, we have a lot of know-how and sort of knowledge and expertise, and we're actually doubling down on our consultancy because very practically we see this all the time where this stack makes sense, but we have this legacy, we want to do these migrations, or I just bought this fancy product analytics tool and, you know, I want real best practices and like how to set this up and can you actually go set this up? And again, it's fragmented today, right? Like, you know, we want to go implement this fancy BI tool, or we want to go implement this, sort of product analytics tool or whatever. And great, we'll sell you the tool and now go to this consultancy and, you know, more fragmentation, right? You go to someone else to go help you implement it. So we're actually, you know, not just on the platform side, but on the services side, how do we really make this easy for people? You know, ultimately what we care about the most is get ROI from your data. Because unless a company does that, it's you know, it's bad for us, it's bad for our platform partners, because at some point, things, you know, if they're not getting value from it, you know, at some point they're going to stop doing it. So that's kind of our approach, which is, you know, very different from what a lot of other data platform companies are doing.
I wanted to bring up a point, you know, if you look at the PaaS type companies too, so like specifically, I'm thinking like the most extreme example as AWS, right? They have like how many services on their platform now? Probably thousands. Like in every vertical, they have multiple. They're like, we don't care if you like MySQL, Postgres, or any of like these 12 different databases. We have a service for it. Like, you knock yourself out. They haven't been building a lot of Glue. They have a product called Glue, but they haven't built, they're like, hey, we're just good at running these things in isolation, the latest official release. Maybe we contribute to open source, maybe we don't. We actually don't. We just take the latest release of these things, or the latest, the stable releases. We run them for you, just make sure they're up and running. You're in charge of building your own Glue, right? A lot of what we do now is assemble some piece puzzles that are, don't really fit well together with AWS. I think on your side, you have an opportunity to do something different because you don't run the cloud service, you don't run the services, you're just putting together the cloud services. So you can go focus on creating a cohesive experience, right? Because you don't have to care about running Superset, upgrading Superset, fixing the bugs or securities in Superset. You can just be like, how do we make sure that the things we put in our platform work very well together, which is awesome.
Yeah, we do the interoperability automatically, right? And we sort of build the Glue happens automatically in 5x. So you push a button and you provision preset, or you have the white glove and we provision it for you. It's automatically connected to your warehouse. We're using best practices. How many, you know, production Snowflake instances contain a role called test role or test DB, right? Like the famous joke is like, you know,
it's not with a password.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And if you look at AWS, you know, building a data platform on AWS is not popular. Like they have Redshift, but from very practical experience, we build the Redshift, you know, we sort of support Redshift, but very few companies are actually using it, right? BigQuery and sort of Snowflake and Databricks are really taking the market. Even BigQuery is now losing to sort of Databricks, right? And, you know, so it's not easy to build a data platform on your typical AWS warehouses and on your typical GCP. And I think they've lost out on that. And, you know, Snowflake was able to go capitalize because if they truly did a really well integrated experience, and if it was really easy to go, you know, have ingestion, BI, and, you know, modeling and warehouse and reverse ETL and a few of these things in a very, very smooth way, I think it would have made Snowflake's relative massive growth a lot more challenging, because a lot of companies would opt for that. Like companies are like, come to us all the time and they're on AWS's stack and they want to build a data platform there. And they just realize that it's pretty much going back to the drawing board because the Glue, as Max mentioned, isn't there.
Right.
As far as creating that Glue, do you find you have to get invested in kind of the roadmaps and kind of the day-to-day operations of any of the open source or you know, core open source product offerings, and make sure that those integrations are maintained and doing all the things you want, and that they're stable and all of that?
I think we pick projects which are more mature. So, you know, your next seed round funded companies has a great idea, great, but not what 5X focuses on. We want to go after the industry champions. You know, we want to go after the bigger names. And what happens over there is the core APIs, you know, the glue of how do you add sort of warehouse connectors, sort of setting up roles, access control, adding, removing users, looking at utilization, you know, some of the security stuff, those become pretty sort of stable very quickly. So on the glue pieces, you know, once we build these integrations, those parts are stable. That is a second component to this, which is the feature usage. I mean, so which is the new features which they ship to make it easier for customers. And again, over there, our IDE, you know, for some of our companies, you know, on Snowflake and on the warehouses, we've built a native IDE because it's a lot we can do by, you know, and sort of join this to other pieces. But for, you know, for BI and for a lot of these other sort of categories, we would embed that experience into 5X. So the vendors can go change the UI and go ship the new features. And our customers get that because you have this thing, you have an embedded experience in 5X. And we'll handle the, you know, the teams and the provisioning and the integrations and the billing and all of those things, which become a massive pain in the ass and no one wants to do.
Yeah, so, the glue, and also like a security risk. But yeah, I would say like if we think about what is that glue that is needed and even like the hierarchy of needs, maybe one is, or on the enterprise side, there is like the skim provisioning type things, right? And data governance of like, I want to give access to people to different things, and it should be cohesive and safe across all the tooling. So I would say skim, security, governance things, unique federated billing, maybe, yeah, security vouching, like make sure all of your providers are SOC 2. That data transfers between them are, you know, encrypted and all this stuff. So a lot of security stuff. Then there's the whole spectrum of like the user experience and the context shift for the user. And I think that's more challenging, but the vendors are already working in some way. Like we're working on our data catalog integration. So maybe you don't need to get necessarily in the middle of that from your vantage point.
What tends to happen is, again, you know, there's this belief over there, there's this stigma that, hey, I go build 3 or 4 vendors and I'm good and I'm done. But in reality, that's not how data teams work, right? Like this is what we build initially, but now new use cases come up, we need new capabilities. Do we go swap out a vendor or do we actually, you know, add a new category of vendor? And they're always thinking about this. Like, you know, at any point, data teams are thinking about what's next. And again, you want to go do that.
You can never kill a vendor fully, right? Or maybe, but then there's some suffering that comes with that. But there is, yeah, there's people with affiliation that come, like sometimes we win customers or lose customers because a champion for our product moves in and out of a company. So someone who loves preset joins WeWork. I'm bringing preset. I don't care what you have. You know, that's what I want. And then the person that the day that person lives and another leader comes, maybe things move too.
Yeah.
So that will happen.
Exactly. Right. Again, you know, so it's not like create a build the platform. Now I don't need to ever think about this. And like 5X value was only limited to, you know, initially building this. It's like, hey, this is constantly happening. And again, whenever you decide to go do this, you have us, you know, and again, we can barely keep up. Right. And like, you know, going and tracking 500 different tools, we do this full time. So to think that, you know, you want to have your data team think about what's best for you. You can go do that sort of POC across 4 different tools, but it's not a comprehensive process. And having experts there who are, you know, can really guide you on what makes sense for you. And then again, going and getting the new tools, sort of setting it up, doing the migration. So you're really spending 100% of your time on this is what we want. These are the capabilities we need.
I wanted to talk a little bit about like, why is it that we had such an explosion of tool, and like people can probably picture in their head the diagram that shows all of the logo of all the data companies with the different categories, and there's like 5,000 logos on there. And how did we get here? How is that gonna evolve? And I was talking with a founder, Zender at ByteWalks, this morning. We spoke about this topic of hype cycles and how VCs, they put fertilizer on everything and make a lot of stuff grow, which is really great. But I think the downside of that too is so much stuff grows that it has to kind of grow on each other and kind of create a lot of confusion for the garden. If you're a gardener, you know, and all of a sudden the garden is like, you know, 5,000 different types of fruits and vegetables are growing on top of another. And then it's getting to disrepair because there's not enough, you know, real estate and space and like say real customers for all of these different products. What we see happen is this nice era of hype where a lot of stuff gets created. But yeah. Then the down cycle of that is a lot of stuff falls into disrepair. You know, it doesn't work together and the customer's going to lose in the end. Right. And it's happening. The same thing that happened this happened with data over the past 5-10 years, like I would say 5 years, very, very aggressively. And it's happening with AI now. Like we know AI is going to be big, but there's going to be also like tens of thousands of companies that are not going to make it through. So anyway, like, no, not a real, like, I just used the opportunity to, you know, talk about like how we got here, but yeah, maybe think about your role in that of like picking the right, you know, bits and pieces and making them work together.
I love your example of the farm and the gardener, right? Like, you know, fine tuning that analogy a little bit. The way I see it is like, you have a gardener and this gardener wanted to grow apples and he would go buy an apple seed and he would grow an apple tree. And today it's more like you have 30 different types of apples and the gardener all of a sudden is like, wait, what type of apple do I want? What, you know, what seed is right for me? And yeah. Spending all of this time, like, this is something gardeners never thought about. And I'm like, wouldn't it be cool if like a gardener could just go to an expert and be like, hey, here's my land. Here's, you know, what I'm looking for. And the expert could be like, here are 2 or 3 seeds. And here are some of the pros and cons. Great, go pick one. And, you know, it makes it easy. You know, that's kind of the analogy of what's happening today. And I think if, again, like 10, 15 years ago, you had Informatica. And the reason I think the modern data stack is the way it is everyone hated working on Informatica, not the decision maker who would buy it and implement it, but the engineers actually working on it. And we had all of these founders who like went to individual pieces and said, I can do this 100 times better. And we're going to build something which is 100x better. And that made a lot of sense. But again, mm-hmm. We've got carried away. Like
companies got funded. I feel like a data catalog, right? That's like, oh, you know, that's a worthy thing. We should invest into it. But then we funded 10 different data catalogs company instead of funding one proper. That's a really great one for everyone, right? Like, so
all of these companies live in this world where they all are between, you know, $1 to $10 million of ARR, where, you know, not enough to go get widespread adoption, but different customers have implemented these different tools. And we're kind of stuck in this middle ground right now. I think extremes.
If you picture a slightly different world where maybe the investment's a little bit more concentrated in 1 or 2 players, then all the people that instead of going to work for these 10 different companies, the best people that want to work on this problem get together and really solve the problem, as opposed to having incubating 10 companies and then just 1 or 2 ends up winning. But along the journey, you know, it creates a lot of confusion and thrash.
But you have to also look at the VC space. What happened is 10 years ago, we had a fraction of the number of VCs and some of them did really well. And all of a sudden, everyone else wanted to become a VC. So you can't have, you know, if the number of VCs goes 100x, then naturally speaking, you're going to have 100x more investments and they're not investing all in the same company. Like you aren't going to have, you know, Unreason and Greylock and Sequoia all investing inside Preset. So naturally they, you know, 100x more VCs, they are going to fund and that's going to create explosion. So it's not just on like smart engineers wanting to go build a different product, but from what happened in funding in like 2019 to 2021 was that there's just so much money on the table for new ideas. And yeah. we are starting to, I mean, we've definitely seen that, and that's why 5X exists.
Yeah, you know, it's like you get to a point where like the VCs are cannibalizing each other for even like markets that don't exist yet, you know? So it's just, it makes it hard, probably.
I think like observability,
sorry, what is that?
No, I said observability is a prime example, right? It wasn't a full category as yet. It was an idea. And like, you know, when it's an idea stage, you would assume that there would be a few, you know, it's a long shot investment. But we have 20 observability companies now when a category is still like a question mark of, is this a feature or is this a category?
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, one thing is with the approach we have now, you go and fund everything. And then once, you know, after the nuclear winter and like a bad market like we're having now, we'll see, you know, the stuff that will be left will be the winners, you know.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I had a lot of other questions about kind of 5X and how it operates, but I guess one thing we didn't cover in this is, as far as the curatorial experience, I'm glad you chose Preset, but I bet a lot of our audience is interested in the background of how you made that selection. I'd love to hear that backstory.
Or how we made the connection too between us, our GPT, which is a good segue from VCs. But I think two or three years ago, so my investors were like, do you want to be a scout, an angel scout for the company? So that means they give me a little bit of their, the VCs have like huge funds, but they give a little bit of money to founders and let them invest their money, the VC's money, and the scout fund. That allows them to keep an eye a little bit as to which companies are interesting and provides an easy way for an intro, right? So, you know, people at A6CZ might be like, hey, can we get an intro to Roosh now that you know him well through your angel investment? So that's how we got, so we got connected to Julien, though, who's a friend and a data leader to you.
Yeah, we were introduced by Julien. Julien was at WeWork. He was building Marquez, which became open source Lineage, acquired by Astronomer. Actually, Max and I had met at a few conferences before, very, very briefly. And obviously, you know, love the concept of Preset. You know, you were kind of asking this question. It's not just like any idea which we would want to go integrate with. In some ways, we call ourselves the Apple of the data platform, right? We take, you know, we're not doing 10 different vendors inside every category. We want to go pick the two or three which we think will be the long-term winners. And in terms of open source BI, Preset was very clear that this is the right vendor. You know, the team very strong, Max sort of someone we knew, sort of someone who bought into the vision, because we can go integrate with like a vendor and, you know, we think that we want to go integrate with this vendor. There's also a buy-in on like, where is the company going, right? When you think about the world from the Apple perspective, it's like, are we aligned in what the vision of the future looks like? Because we can go integrate with a BI tool, but the next day, if they decide to, you know, directly go connect to every single source system in the world and, you know, get rid of the whole warehouse or get rid of the whole, you know, transformation space, then it doesn't really fit into like, you know, where we think that the entire space is going. So, based on all of these decisions, it was actually one of our easiest decisions to go integrate with Preset. And, you know, Max was obviously very interested in, you know, the approach we were taking it and, you know, with the scout program and, you know, Max investing into 5X, it made a ton of sense.
So curious, like it's a bit of a side question too, but on the 5X platform, there's a fair amount of open source things, but there are things that are not open source too. Is open source important to your customers in general, some of your customers, or it's more important to you as a service provider?
It's both, right? Like when I think about our customers, you know, when we think about personalizing an experience for a customer's industry, use case, size, and budget, that's really what we think about, right? Like open source alternatives they add huge optionality in this, where, you know, you might, where a company is based on its sort of culture, based on its DNA, is a company which is really excited about the open source sort of concepts. And you have some companies which where it's not really as important, and they're looking for, you know, Snowflake is an open source, right? Fivetran is an open source, but sort of BBT and Preset are, right? So even inside, you know, our widely adopted sort of vendors in the space, there isn't like 100% feature parity over here. But, you know, the macro bet of open source projects having community support, able to pivot and iterate faster, it's a no-brainer that, you know, long-term, they would be have more adoption, more community support, so be able to better serve customers. So we believe in that vision, and that's why, you know, apart from optionality of sort of customers at different capabilities, features, and price points, open source is a long-term play. But we also partner with commercial vendors who build non-open source, because ultimately over here, the goal is to provide the best experience for a customer. And there's some categories, some vendors who are not open source, which could be building incredible solutions. What we've always focused on is we're not going to go deploy open source ourselves. We are going to go use the managed versions of our providers.
Yeah, I think a thing that could be interesting too is like if you're building a lot of glue to bring these things together, so open source is typically more integrated or integratable, malleable, it's more extensible. So that means if you needed a specific hook to hook two systems together, like if it came down to it, then you can go and contribute it as opposed to depending on, you know, Looker or Sigma to do some things. I think that's good. And I like the idea of falling back on the community as a safety net for support, right? So someone has a really intricate, complicated question about certain things. I guess in some ways for your non-open source solutions, you know, they can go straight to the vendor, I guess, even through a hop. But at least in the case of the open source solution, there's, you know, the bulk of the support and the resources are right there in the open for everyone.
Yeah. No, I think that's, yeah, extremely valid. I think, I think, you know, we're seeing this is like a little bit different inside different categories, right? For example, you know, look at reverse ETL as a category. You have two players, both of which are not open source. You know, mm-hmm. The open source optionality, maybe through Rudderstack, is like, yeah, I think Rudderstack does an incredible job inside CDP and inside that category, maybe nowhere close to the level of maturity needed in terms of pure the reverse ETL play, right? So, you know, depending on the category, you know, BI modeling, obviously more mature categories, so there's more optionality. But unfortunately, the way the ecosystem is built in some of these categories, it's not even, you know, you just don't have that you don't have that level of optionality.
Yeah, what's up with reverse ETL not having an open source solution? There's got to be one, which might not be as prevalent or established.
And I think we've learned this the hard way, right? If it's not as prevalent and established, you know, we're not going after it right now. We want to go work with you know, again, in the Apple approach, you know, what are vendors which are, you know, relatively on the uprise right now? Which makes sense, you know, hence, like, you know, just going back to the observability, and, you know, we haven't fully committed to integrating those sort of categories in it as yet, just because, you know, we have a very interesting lens. We see what customers want. So, mm-hmm. You know, very, very interesting for us because we get to speak, you know, we're end to end across your entire data ecosystem. So compared to, let's say, a data modeling tool or a BI tool where, you know, you're looking at a subset of what the customers are looking for, we get a macro view of this. So we actually have a pretty good idea, and this is just going to, you know, sort of get better and better of, you know, what our customers really asking for.
Is that converging in a fragmented world? Like over time, do you feel like it's becoming like less things that people say they want, or is it still all over the place or diverging in terms of people want more diverse set of things?
I think a lot of this comes down to your company, right? Again, based on industry use case size, you're going to have different capabilities your business needs. A/B testing becomes relevant for a percentage of customers, again, based on the industry and based on even the use cases over there. So I think in this case, like, the generalist is an oversimplification. This really depends on industries and sort of use cases. And that determines the capabilities you need.
Well, I think we're getting near that time where I might get to ask one more question about this vision of the future and where things are going in terms of trends. I guess I'll give you the chance of answering either one of these. One might be, what is one of these kind of emerging trends that you're particularly excited about? Or what's something that's on 5X's roadmap that you'd like to kind of speculate on a bit?
I think we are, you know, Matt Turk, who produces the sort of state of data, the mad list of all the different vendors, he said something very interesting in 2023, and it was one of his top three level predictions, where he was calling it fully managed. And, you know, obviously 5X is trying to be the poster child of fully managed. So, you know, very, very bullish on the fully managed sort of categories. You know, don't worry about the infrastructure, get a fully managed platform and focus on, you know, ROI. That's something which, you know, in terms of the vision of the future, we think 2023 was the beginning of it. There are a few other players very different from us, but do fully manage. We think 2024 is when it's really going to become mainstream. Yeah, I think that's one of the bets, which I think that's one of the visions of the future, which we're very heavily invested in. And I think the other thing is going to be FinOps, the rise of like FinOps, of like cost optimization, of, you know, having more visibility into spend, tools around optimizing spend. We think FinOps is, again, going to be something which becomes increasingly important as we think about 2020.
So, yeah, operational metadata and saving cost and what, I guess, DBAs, kind of use optimization.
We're talking about, like, you know, when you have multiple different vendors and each of them are trying to maximize value, each of them are trying to maximize their own ARR from you. That's where they own ACV from you. Yeah. And then you have all this level of redundancy. You know, how many users do you have who are actually not ever logging into your tool, and how many tables are you ingesting which you're never actually using? But, you know, optimizing spend holistically, and, you know, we have a few players doing it, but, you know, we do a little bit of it. But I think, again, it's going to be a category which in 2024, I think, is going to get more and more traction.
All right.
I'll take a future prediction, or maybe a set of thoughts and questions. I've been thinking a lot about AI and how it's taken over job, But I think, you know, I've been thinking more about it. I've listened to a long lecture yesterday. I'll try to put it in the show notes around, it was like software engineering is essentially dead. Like, people won't be writing code anymore in very long. And then there was something interesting where the guy, you know, had a perspective of a real SWE doing a lot of SWE work using, you know, the latest AI technology, and really seeing, like, really, like, our profession is at stake. But he was like, but you know what? Like, PMs are okay because they do more of the things that are a little bit more subtle, and that's more of an art than a science. And my thought when I heard this originally was just like, I think PMs are augmented just as well by AI and LLM too. So they're, I think from the perspective of the person seeing how good the AI is at their area of expertise, they think like, oh, my job might be changing a lot very quickly. And then other jobs that I know less about might be more safe because I know less about it. But I think the PMs or the other people, if they go through a similar exercise of seeing how AI can help them, they're going to see something similar. So the point here being a doomsday kind of point of like, there's no safe area, everybody. There's nowhere to hide. It's coming from you. I think the way it's going to go is more about, you know, task level skill versus executive skills. Not that AI cannot help on the executive skill, but like the data TPM, right? The data PM, who's like coordinating a lot of tasks and a lot of people, might get a lot of help from AI, but they're, you know, they might be safe for a little bit longer. Anyhow, a bit of a not much of a prediction other than it's coming from all angle, and the industry is going to change quite a bit. And probably the best thing to do is to widen your skill, go more horizontal, like connecting things together.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing how these predictions pan out. This will be forever on the internet, so we'll be able to check back in a year or two or three and see how it all shaped up. But in the meantime, I very much thank you for being part of the rekindling of the Analytics Everywhere podcast, and we hope to see you here again. And everybody that's listening or watching, by all means, keep track of these predictions and everything that takes shape on 5x.co and preset.io. Thank you.
Thank you all.
See you next time.
Thanks, guys.